2 pitch. Swing and a miss. Knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball. It's Wednesday, September 14th, 2016. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chad Chesko. And Chad, I know the easy thing to do tonight would be to open the show with Carson Wentz, so we're not going to do that then. We're going to talk linebackers tonight with two of the best ever to put on the Eagles uniform, Seth Joyner and Bill Berge. We'll have Fred Hugo with our Fred and Butter segment handicapping the NFC East games. We're going to talk some Phillies, and I want to get your take on the Allen Iverson induction ceremony. And, oh, yeah, we'll probably talk some Carson Wentz as well. And did I forget to mention that we will have our Week 1 winner, the Philly Press Box Pick'em Pool, on as well? We're going to be all out tonight, brother.
Oh, yeah, lots to cover for sure, Bill. And, yeah, you mentioned those legendary linebackers. I remember a Bleacher Report article a couple of years back that ranked the Eagles' 50 greatest players of all time, and there were six linebackers on that list. Number one, of course, being the late, great Chuck Bednarik, the greatest Eagle of all time. But among the linebackers, numbers two and three on that list happened to be Bill Berge, who joins us later, and Seth Joyner. So this is going to be a real treat, not only for our listeners, but for us.
All right. Well, I am I'm excited about it. And do we have Seth with us right yet?
Not just yet. He should be calling any second now, we hope.
Okay. Well, hey, Chet, let's go ahead. We will shift around while we wait on Seth. And let's talk about that Carson Wentz in that opening game. Quite a show.
Wow, yeah. I mean, it certainly matched and exceeded everybody's expectations. And give kudos to the coach, Doug Peterson, for giving him a great game plan to work with. You know, he didn't give him too much to do right away, but, you know, once Wentz showed that he could handle it, he gave him some of the longer passes. And, boy, what a way to start the game with an opening drive that resulted in 6 points. So you couldn't ask for anything more from Carson Wentz and the Eagles' offense.
Yeah, I tell you, he did exactly what I was kind of saying I thought he could do last week. As you know, I'm really high on him after seeing him just in that brief preseason action, but I actually got to see him with my own eyes and not on TV, and I thought I saw some really good things. I feel like he's going to be the whole package, and it's not really based on the Cleveland game. Of course, that's the end result, but as much on what I got to see with my own eyes, I just think we've got something special here to build on.
Yeah, a lot of poise, certainly, and a lot of talent. He made the throws. He took command of the offense. So very, very impressive, and not surprising that the number one selling jersey Monday and Tuesday this week around the U.S. was that of Carson Wentz, number 11.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And How about Jordan Matthews? I thought he had an interesting game. He ended up with over 100 yards receiving, but then he turned around and had a couple big drops that at the time looked like they were going to be kind of crucial plays, but then he turns around, makes a couple nice plays, and statistically he ends up with a nice game.
Yeah, he did. He had the drop early on, the very first drive, the only incompletion of that opening drive, but he did come back and finish strongly, that's for sure. I was a little concerned about Darren Sproles, who did not have a great game other than the 40-yard punt return. He had a couple of drops in pass formation, and his runs were nothing special. So I think Sproles has to rebound with a big game Monday night in Chicago. We'll talk more about that as we go along.
Yeah, we will. And offensively, you know, Zach Ertz looks like he's going to be out for a couple weeks, and you know, if there's one position that they're probably strong at, it is tight end, and Brett Celek can step in and take care of that. But the one guy that, as the week has gone on already, we've seen is the play of Jason Kelce, and that might be a little bit of a question down the road here. We'll have to see how that pans out. He did not have a good game.
No, we're going to have to watch that offensive line the whole entire season. We got to keep Peters healthy, of course. We still don't know anything about Lane Johnson's possible suspension. He's just going to keep going out there and playing until they tell him otherwise, I guess. They did an okay job, all in all, the offensive line. But Wentz did take five or six hits, and one or two of those was, pretty big. He really got thrown to the ground on that one. So that's going to be a concern. You got to keep Wentz healthy because – no offense to Chase Daniel, but nobody wants to see him in there.
Well, you need to keep him healthy because he's your franchise quarterback. So regardless of who the backup is, we need to keep Carson Wentz on his feet. And you know what? This whole Lane Johnson thing, I'm kind of surprised. You know, in my business, we do drug testing all the time, and there's the sample, and then there's the split sample, and this and that. That split sample result is back. Almost immediately, within a couple of days. We're out here, 5 weeks maybe? 4 weeks? 5 weeks?
I think it's six.
And we don't have an answer.
From the beginning.
I have to think that there's nothing going to come of this. You can't wait till the middle of the season.
Yeah, I think the longer it goes, the more likely it is that he is not going to be suspended. I don't know what in God's green earth would take 6 weeks to get a second sample. I mean, it's coming from the same thing. So I don't know. I don't know how it works, but yeah, it's 5 or 6 weeks now, and it's ridiculous. So let's just hope it doesn't happen and Lane Johnson gets to keep playing, because they could certainly use him on that O-line.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And hey, let's talk defense for just a minute. And this is something I certainly want to speak to Seth about and get his opinion. But I thought that it was the defensive line, I thought, was somewhat average for a while. And then as the game kept going into the third quarter and the fourth quarter, they wore Cleveland down and started making some pretty big plays. But in the first half, even though the Eagles didn't give up a ton of points, I didn't think the strong suit, which is that defensive line, was playing that well.
No, not terrific. So that's a bit of a concern, but I think they'll be all right. They did have, three sacks, and I think they can show a little more on Monday night when they go into Chicago. The Bears' O-line is nothing special, I don't think. I know they got a free agent signing from Green Bay over the summer. They do have to step it up a little bit, because that is certainly the top segment, the top set of players on the Birds is that defensive line. They got 9 or 10 guys that they can rotate in there, so we want to see a little more from them for sure.
Yeah. And, I thought the defensive backs did okay. They're going to be challenged certainly a little more this week by Jay Cutler and the Bears. But, we'll talk about that when we get with Fred a little bit later, how that game's going to turn out. But I thought overall, you only give up 10 points in an NFL game, you've done your job.
Yeah, that's true. And people are going to say it was only Cleveland. And that's one thing that everybody's saying, the skeptics. It was the Browns, who may be the worst team in the league. As far as we know, they are an NFL team, so we'll take the W against them. Chicago's going to be a little tougher for sure. The Bears are favored, in fact, in their home opener. It's not going to be easy to win in Chicago on a Monday night, so this is going to be a real test for Carson Wentz and company.
Well, absolutely. But I'll go back to your comment on Cleveland, and one of my old sayings has been for forever is you never have to apologize for winning. The game's on the schedule. It doesn't matter who you're playing. You win. That's what you're supposed to do when you go out there, and you certainly don't have to apologize because you beat a team that some people don't think are going to be very good. Well, you know what? So a lot of people don't think the Eagles are going to be very good before this game. So you beat the teams you're supposed to, and you certainly don't have to apologize for that.
A win over the Browns counts just as much over the win over as a win over the Patriots. Like you said, they're all equal, those W's.
Yeah, that's right. And even bigger is the fact that it's opening day at home. If you lose that game to the Browns, it's how can you lose to the Browns at home? So you took care of your business. You won at home, and you're 1-0. And by the way, two teams in your conference, in your division, lost. So you're sitting on top, whether it's one game in or 16 games in.
Yeah, that's right. We'll talk more about the schedule as we go along, you know, over the next few weeks. But let's just do what most coaches will tell you to do. Take them one game at a time. You got the opening week win, and now it's on to Chicago for week two, and a huge game. I mean, I'll tell you, if they come back 2-0, this town is going to be really buzzing about this team.
Yeah, you bet. It'll be for good reason. So we'll see how it plays out. It certainly was fun to watch, and a lot of bright things happened last Sunday.
Yeah, they sure did. You mentioned the Zach Ertz injury. A lot of people are concerned about that. It's definitely a loss when you lose your starting tight end, who had a pretty good game, made a great catch on the opening drive. But the one thing there is they have three tight ends who can play. You know, Brent Celek is a veteran, and Trey Burton is back for game two. He's certainly not Zach Ertz, but he's certainly a capable fill-in at the same time. So if you run Celek and Trey Burton out there, I think you're going to be all right. So, you know, we wish Zach Ertz the best. Hope he's back for week three. And just go with who you have.
Yep, and, you know, and the fact that they know early that Ertz is out, they can game plan around that. They'll be fine. That's not going to be a problem for them. They'll be fine with that.
Yeah, Jake Culler is a guy who I think can be rattled. I heard a lot of the experts say this. In fact, Malcolm Jenkins said it in an interview with John Clark that you can rattle Jake Culler if you give him a lot of pressure, hit him a few times, get him you know, under pressure. So maybe a little bulletin board fodder right there. But he's saying if you pressure Jake Culler and knock him around a bit, that he's going to be more likely to make some bad throws.
Well, and that's true, but the flip side is Jake Cutler is very capable of putting up 350 yards and three touchdowns against you, too. So, you know, you got to be careful what you look for there.
Yeah, he did not have a great opening game. I think he was sacked five times. His numbers were nothing special, low 200s in passing, one touchdown, one pick. But, yeah, like you said, you don't know which Jay Cutler you're going to get. He's had some success over the years against Jim Schwartz defenses, so that's something to consider right there. I'm sure Schwartz is aware of that and certainly aware of Cutler having been in that same division for a while. Going to be an interesting matchup, and Cutler will certainly test the Eagles secondary.
You bet. Wait, well, hey, Chip, while we're looking for Seth trying to find where he is, I have something a little off of the Eagles for a minute that I wanted to talk about tonight and let our listeners know about a real important event that's being held this weekend by one of our long-term listeners, Pat Doherty. And Pat and his wife, Amy, have started a foundation called liamsdream.org. It's to help autistic families transition their loved ones into a career. And as you can imagine, Pat and Amy's son, Liam, is autistic, and they are taking a bull by the horns here and trying to make something happen. So they'll be holding their first fundraiser event at the McDade Bowl in Holmes, PA. That's down by Ridley, if Ridley's a bigger town for those that are listening. It'll be this Sunday, the 18th, from 12 to 3. Remember, there's no Eagles game since they play Monday. So just a small listing of some of the auction or raffle prizes are from Temple, four tickets to the Temple ECU football game. St. Joe's has offered up two tickets to the men's opening home basketball game and two tickets to any woman's basketball game, a hoodie, a baseball cap, a whole package came out from the St. Joe Hawks. Primus Sea Cane Swim Club has offered up a large frame filled with lottery scratch-off tickets. Baskets from the Clifton Heights Boys Club that includes dinner for two at local restaurants, as well as baskets from WOGL and WMGK Radio. Our good friend Carl Henderson from Carl's Cards and Collectibles has donated some beautiful framed items, including an autographed Jim Bunning poster, autographed photo of Matt Stairs hitting a home run against the Dodgers in the NLCS of 2008, an autographed portrait of Football Hall of Fame in Canton signed by Eagles legend Chuck Benarek, and an autographed picture of Notre Dame great and Heisman Trophy winner Paul Hornung. They'll also be raffling off a pair of Flyers Islanders tickets for March the 30th game. It's also the Autism Awareness Night. So there are also items that are non-sports related, so check out the entire list on the Liam's Dream Facebook page. And so take your family bowling, participate in a great event. You can get more information through the Liam's Dream Facebook page, through the liamsdream.org website, by contacting Pat and Amy at liamsdream@yahoo.com or by calling them 610-368-1450. And we certainly wish them a lot of luck with this great cause, and looking forward to having a good time out there.
Absolutely. All right, Bill, we do have Seth Joyner now, so let's get right to it and welcome former Eagles Pro Bowl linebacker Seth Joyner to the show. Seth, this is Chet. You're on with Chet and Bill. Welcome to the program. How you doing, Seth?
Hello.
How are you? Seth, first up, let's thank Pat Waters at Strategic Sports for helping to arrange your visit with us. We know how busy you are with all the TV and radio that you do. Before we talk about the Eagles, we mentioned linebacker play. Did you have any favorite pro linebackers back in your formative years, say pre-1986?
You know, believe it or not, my favorite player of all time has and always will be Earl Campbell. I was an Oilers fan simply because of him. So, I mean, I was aware of the great linebacker play on the Pittsburgh Steelers, but I wasn't a Pittsburgh fan because they always beat up on my Oilers.
Earl was a heck of a player back in those days, no doubt about that.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, he was a one-man wrecking crew, and I just loved his mental attitude, the way he played the game all out. And, you know, for those reasons, he's always been my favorite player. There's no one better in my mind than Earl Campbell.
Okay. Well, Seth, hey, let's talk Eagles for a second. And we were talking briefly before we got you, talking about the Eagles' defensive front. They seemed to start out a little bit slow on Sunday, but come the third quarter, they wore them down, turned on the juice, and looked like they got some real good play from the front and from the linebackers. What was your take on that, only giving up 10 points?
Well, you know, anytime you can only give up 10 points as a defense, you know, you had a great day. I was a little concerned in the first half because while the game was still close, it looked as though Cleveland was able to run the ball, you know, effectively, particularly in the second quarter. And RG3 really began to gain some confidence and some momentum there for a while. But I think the turning point in the game was the 4th-and-3 that we went for that Wentz completed to Zach Ertz, and then the next play, we hit Aguilar on the bomb. Then we get the 2-point safety with the snap over the quarterback's head, and I think that really switched the game, the complete momentum to our side. And then what wound up happening is, you know, as a defensive line, they're behind. You know that they've got to throw the ball to get back in the game, and that just turned our pass rush loose to just, you know, wreak havoc on that offense. So, you know, while 10 points is something great to be proud of. I'd like to see them, you know, perform at a higher level in the first half of the game and not really have the game stay that close against the offense like the Cleveland Browns. But, you know, it's going to take some adjustment and take some time. They've got some great players, and I think they're going to be okay.
Seth, I know that pretty much from the time Carson Wentz was drafted, you were an advocate of playing him. Now, post-trade, you got your wish, and you're looking like a bit of a genius this week. I saw one of your tweets on Sunday. Philly fans, we got a quarterback, you said. Now, at the risk of jumping to conclusions from one game, do you think he can be a franchise quarterback?
You know, listen, if he's capable of doing it, you know, in one game, then in my mind he's capable of doing it on a continuous basis. You know, he's going to have some growing pains. He's going to have some great games like he had on Sunday, but it's not always going to be that way, and that's just a part of becoming, you know, a growing quarterback. And The fact of the matter is no one plays like that on every single Sunday. You know, you have some guys that perform at that level more times than not, but it's highly unlikely to expect for this kid, you know, as a rookie to come in and continue to play at that level. When they start playing against teams that are blitz heavy, you know, then, you know, we're really going to see what he's made of because, hey, you know, I was surprised that Ray Horton didn't come after him more in the first half. I think he was – really surprised at how well our wide receivers were performing and decided that he didn't want to take the chance of putting pressure on and giving up big plays. But he's going to face some teams, you know, probably in the Pittsburgh Steelers down the road where, you know, defensive coordinator is going to give him some looks he's probably never seen before. You know, they're going to put some pressure on him. He's going to be in a one-read situation or the blitz is going to be right on him. And then, you know, we'll kind of find out, you know, what's going on. But there's no doubt in my mind. I felt even before the draft, you know, considering the three quarterbacks, he and Goff and Paxton Lynch, that he was going to be the best of the three because of his ability, you know, not only to scramble, but to scramble and make plays on the run, to you know, the offense that they ran when he was at North Dakota State, being able to check plays and control the offense at the line of scrimmage, something that those two quarterbacks, you know, really weren't doing. So I felt that he'd be, you know, further along than they were. And I still feel like, you know, when it's all said and done 10, 15 years down the road, that, you know, we will have made the best decision out of those three quarterbacks.
All right, Seth, now it's a trip to the Windy City for a Monday night game with the Bears in Week 2. It's Chicago's home opener. Jay Cutler, the Bears quarterback, was sacked 5 times on Sunday. He's got a couple of decent weapons, I guess, in Alshon Jeffrey and Kevin White. What's the plan against Cutler in that offense?
Well, I think Cutler's another one of those quarterbacks that doesn't handle pressure very well. You know, Jim Schwartz has traditionally been known as a coordinator that likes to put pressure on the quarterback. You know, I think if we can control the run out the gate and put them in a predictable situation like we did last week with Cleveland in the second half, that we should, you know, have another successful outing. I really don't know much about their defense. I know that over the last few years they've struggled to try to rebuild the defense, and, you know, even though they're not, you know, jogging out on the offensive side of the ball, that they definitely struggle on the defensive side of the ball. So, I mean, I don't think we could have asked for a better beginning in having to play the Cleveland Browns and the Chicago Bears back-to-back with a young rookie quarterback that's, you know, learning his way through this league.
Seth, you're the expert on linebackers, and I have a question for you on Michael Kendrick. You know, in the last 3 years combined, he's the leading tackler on the team, and but he seems to spend more time in people's doghouse than out. What do you see with him? Is he just looking like he's going to be the odd man out here?
Well, you know, I've always felt for Michael because I think that Michael has the most talent of any linebacker that we have on that roster. You know, from a skill standpoint, from an athleticism standpoint, speed and aggression, it just seems to me like, you know, he has a hard time, you know, reading offensive plays and doing multiple things. And in today's league, you know, every defense is multiple. You know, you start off in one thing, they shift emotion to something else, and you've got to be able to adjust on the fly. And Michael seems like the type of player, you know, you give him a one-track thing. You know, you either rush or you cover that guy or you cover the tight end. You know, you give him or you blitz, you know, they have the B-gap. You give him one thing to do and he can perform. But I think when he's bogged down with, you know, multiple things within a defense to have to do, that, you know, it hasn't been good for him. And to his defense, you know, I don't think that, you know, as an organization – coaching-wise, that we've done the best job of bringing on coaches that develop players. You know, he is the type of player that needs technique and fundamentals, you know, repetition on reading blocking schemes, offensive blocking schemes, you know, to get better. I think that's one of the things that have really plagued our team as a whole. When you look at the lack of development at the wide receiver spot, when you look at the lack of development in the secondary, particularly at the cornerback position, and when you look at the lack of development at the linebacker spot, you see a lot of draft picks there, you see a lot of talent there, but you just don't see the return on investment and what you put into these guys. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, the players have something to do with that. They've got to put the work in, but a lot of times the player is limited by the knowledge that his coach and his position coach has, you know, and if they can't make you better, if they're just an X and O guy, then you're just going to be an X and O player without the fundamentals and the technique and the things that, and the little nuances that's necessary for you to improve year after year.
Hey, Seth, I have a couple of other questions for you. I actually met you at a 2012 Kisses for Kyle fundraiser at McFadden's through her buddy Mike Barnes. And we talked for about 5 minutes, you and I, about your old Eagles head coach, Buddy Ryan, whom we, of course, lost this past June. Tell everyone again what Buddy meant to you in your career.
Well, I mean, you know, Buddy meant everything. You know, when you have aspirations of playing in the NFL, you know what's in your heart, you know what's in your mind, you know what your athletic ability is, but other people don't seem to, you know, to see it. Sometimes all you need is one person to believe in you, and Buddy Ryan was that one person that believed in me above and beyond anyone else. You know, not only did he draft me, but he gave me an opportunity to start. He gave me an opportunity to, you know, flourish on that defense with so many great players. He put me in position to make plays. You know, I'll forever be indebted to him. He will always be, you know, someone that I hold with high regard because, you know, you knew where you stood with Buddy. There was no games being played. He didn't tell you one thing and do something different. You know, you knew exactly where you stood with him at all time, and you knew that you could trust his word. If he said he was going to do something, then he did just that. And then once you became one of his guys, you know, by proving yourself that, you know, you were willing to put in the work, to do what was necessary, to do what you were asked to do, to hold up your end of the bargain, you know, then he stood firmly behind you 100%. So I will always hold him in great esteem.
Yeah, I love Buddy as well. Hey, finally, Seth, please explain this one to me because I don't get it. How the heck is a guy with 52 sacks, 24 interceptions, 26 forced fumbles, Hall of Fame type numbers, not even in the Eagles Hall of Fame as yet? That is an outrage. Tell me why that's the case.
You know, the thing about Hall of Fames is, you know, someone has the vote, you know, to put you in or hold you out. You know, and unfortunately for yourself, you don't, you know, you don't have a say in it. You know, even people who feel as though you should be in, they're not the decision makers. So it always winds up falling on the decision makers. You know, while it would be a great honor for me to be in the Eagles Hall of Fame or at least be on the ballot for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, you know, that would for me be just icing on the cake because when I first got into the game, I got into the game purely for the love of the game, not to be a Hall of Famer, not to be an Eagle Hall of Famer or anything else. But, you know, if it's to be, you know, it'll happen. If not, it doesn't minimize my career. My numbers speak for themselves as
yep.
with regards to the Eagles or the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And, you know, that's all you can do. You know, I don't like to talk about it a lot because, you know, the one thing you can't do is self-promote in these types of situations, you know, and I would never want to do that. I would want the people who hold the vote to look at my body of work and make a decision based upon what they believe I accomplished.
Well, I would certainly promote you. You deserve it, Seth.
Yeah, I would too for both of them. Well, Seth, I think we've used up all your time already, and we certainly appreciate you stopping by. Maybe we can get back with you sometime during the season.
Anytime, guys. You guys have a great week.
All right,
thanks. Seth. Take care.
All right, Chad. Hey, you had a chance to sit down with another Eagles great linebacker this week, and my all-time favorite Eagles player ever, Bill Berge. Tell us about that.
Yeah, had a great talk with Berge, who, as mentioned earlier, is considered the greatest living Eagles linebacker. He spent a great 7 years with the Birds, and like all of us, he likes what he saw in that Week 1 victory.
Jim Chesko for Philly Press Box Radio, and I'm very happy to be joined by legendary Eagles linebacker Bill Berge. Bill, thanks for taking a few minutes of your time to talk with me.
Well, thank you, Jim. It's my pleasure.
All right, so one game in the books, a W. What are your initial impressions of these 2016 Eagles, and especially rookie quarterback Carson Wentz in the Week 1 win over the Browns?
Well, first of all, I think Carson Wentz did a good job managing the game, and he didn't turn the ball over. The only negative thing I have to say is I think that Cleveland might be one of the worst teams in the NFL. I mean, they've had 21 starting quarterbacks in the last 9 years, and they look like they should have number 22 pretty quick. So outside of that, a win is a win, and any win in the NFL is a big one.
Other than Carson Wentz, any Birds stand out with their play on Sunday?
Well, first of all, let's go to the rookie head coach. I mean, he's won all four of the exhibition games, and to get the first one, I think kudos to Doug Peterson. I think he did a good job. I always love watching the defensive line, and especially Connor Barwin. Paul Brown, a guy that I played with for 5 years with the Cincinnati Bengals, he would always say before we take the field every time, now remember, guys, it all starts up front. Well, being a young, snotty-nosed little kid, I never really figured that out. But the thing of it is that the defensive line didn't do their job. The linebackers couldn't do their job. And then the defensive backs couldn't do their job. And it's just like the offensive line. If they can't do their job, the quarterback, the wide receivers, the running backs, they can't do their job. So it all starts up front. I thought our line defensively was fantastic, and our offensive line was pretty good.
Yeah, speaking of the defense and new coordinator Jim Schwartz, he switched the Eagles back to a traditional 4-3 defense and a variation of the wide nine. Do you like the potential that this defense has?
You know, I think Jim Schwartz is a great coach. As a matter of fact, when the Eagles had their autism night at Lincoln Financial Field, I got him off into the corner, and I just talked about his theory and his philosophy about defense, and he just said all the right things, and he's pretty much a defensive guru. I know you have to have the players to make your system work, and I do think he has his players.
Speaking of defense, are defense and special teams going to be the keys for the Eagles to succeed this season?
What you have to have in the NFL, and if you're going to be successful and if you're going to get into the playoffs, you have to have all three phases of the game contribute. If you're a weak link on the defensive side, it's going to hurt you. Same with the offense. And, you know, if the special team players, if they can't do their job, you're going to have problems also. And you just got to come together as a team. You know, you hear the old saying, there's no I in team. You got to play together as a group, and that's what's going to be the success for the Philadelphia Eagles, hopefully.
Now, next up, Eagles' week two opponent, the Bears, out in Chicago on a Monday night. Is that a winnable game for the Birds?
Absolutely. It's a winnable game, and anytime you go on the road, now the Chicago Bears, they got beat, so that's going to be a little bit more fodder for them to get out and get their first win. Everybody wants to get the first win in the worst way. And the thing of it is, I've never been a big Jay Cutler fan, so if our defense gets after him and gets him off his spot, I think we're going to be okay. And if Carson can just take another step forward, not turn the ball over, and, you know, balance the run out with a pass, I think we're going to be okay. But is it a winnable game? Absolutely. We could lose it too, but I think we've got an excellent chance of winning it.
Hey, Howie Roseman is back in charge of the Eagles personnel, and he made a slew of offseason moves. Is it possible to have a winning team with that many new faces?
You know, that's a great question, Jim, and I'm going to try to answer it the best I can. I've got to go back to 1980 when we went to the Super Bowl. The thing of it is, we had all played together for probably 5 or 6 years, and playing middle linebacker, I knew what a Claude Humphrey, Charlie Johnson, Lem Burnham, John Bunning to one side, Frank LeMaster to the other side. I knew what all of these guys were going to do. We might not have been in the top 10 as far as talent, but we all played off from each other, and we all knew what each other was going to do. I think the longer that a unit can play together, the better off they are. And I know that Howie wanted to have his own guys in here. DeMarco Murray, he's out of here. DeSean Jackson, LeSean McCoy, he's out of here. And now all of a sudden you get new guys in, and you got to find out what their tendencies are and the way they do certain things. So it's going to be a tough proposition for them.
Speaking of 1980 and those days, what was it like playing for Dick Vermeil? What made him so special?
Dick Vermeil, besides him being my head coach and my boss, I can honestly say to this day he's one of the best buddies I have. You know, he was really, really a difficult coach to play for. He really strived to be the very best. He brought more out of us than we thought we had to give. And the bottom line was he was really fair. And, you know, I still socialize with him probably once a month, and we talk about the old times and all of that. But he loved his players, and we really loved him. He was just a good, hardworking guy that led by example, and we all just followed along with him.
Hmm. All right, Bill, let's finish up with a game of Fast Five. Five simple questions, five brief answers. Here we go.
Okay.
Ray Didinger predicted 5-11. I said 6-10. My radio partner, Bill Furman, is a little more optimistic at 8-8. What's the Bill Berge prediction for this Eagles season?
I've always said this. I think it's right at the 6-10 mark.
Okay. Hey, you played against some terrific quarterbacks in your era. You probably have been asked this before, but, you know, Bradshaw, Staubach, Greasy, Stabler, Tarkenton. Who was the very best quarterback of the 1970s in your view?
I think the best quarterback was Roger Staubach, and he brought out of the Naval Academy, he brought his leadership right into the NFL, and we could be ahead by 4 or 5 points, and he had the ball with less than 2 minutes, and he had to march 80 yards, and, you know, we just knew that he could do it. He just had that kind of command. So it was Roger Staubach, and, you know, Terry Bradshaw, he was a good one too.
Oh, yeah. Hey, what makes a great NFL linebacker?
You know, I think just having an awareness for everything around you and what's happening. Back in my youth, I could go laterally as fast as I could run straight up. And I would diagnose a play and get to an off-tackle play and almost wait for the ball carrier. Now, after I got my knee injury, I would do the same thing, but guess what? The ball carrier was gone. But, you know, he's got to have the size, the strength. Not that I'm smart, but you do have to have a little bit of intelligence to play that position, too.
All right, that was question three. This is 3A. Who's the best Eagles linebacker since Bill Berge?
You know, I want to say I think it's Jeremiah Trotter. 54, he was a guy that had a nose for the ball. I loved his play, and I loved the way he did things.
All right, number four. Other than the money that players earn, what's the biggest difference between the NFL of the 70s versus the NFL of today?
Well, back in the 70s, we were Clydesdales. We would hit, tackle, fall down, go boom. These guys today are like stallions. They are muscle-bound, streamlined, and they're much better athletes than we were. I was standing on the sideline being an honorary captain with Jaworski and Harold Carmichael, and I was looking, and this was the Tampa Bay game last year, and I'm looking at these guys, and I'm looking at Jameis Winston, and I'm looking at all these Tampa Bay Buccaneers and how these guys are all ripped like you can't believe, so muscle-bound. And, you know, I was catching myself saying, I wonder if I would just be an average player today or if I'd be below average. I, you know, I didn't even know. But the game has just gotten much faster, stronger. Guys are bigger. It's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Finally, as noted, the Eagles have a Monday night game in week 2. Any special Monday night football memories from Bill Berge?
Yes, absolutely. It was my first year here in 1974. We were playing the Dallas Cowboys. And the Dallas Cowboys, they were beating us. And a guy from Cookstown State, Doug Dennison, he was going in off tackle. And I kind of went unblocked. And I caught him just right and really undressed the guy. And the ball went flying off to the left. And Joe the Bird Lavender scooped it up. And it was a 14-point turnaround. We went. He went 96 yards for a touchdown. We ended up tying the game, and then eventually Tom Dempsey kicked the field goal, and we won the game. I think it was 17-14 in overtime, and that play right there was a key play in the game.
And that's a great memory for sure. Awesome. Bill Berge, thank you very much. And I should mention, my radio partner, Bill Furman, is a bit envious that I got to do this interview because he's a big, big fan of yours.
Wow.
Anyway, thanks
thank
again
you.
For doing this, Bill, and enjoy the season.
Okay, and you enjoy it too. Let's go, Eagles.
E-A-G-L-E-S, Eagles!
That's great stuff, Chet. And, hey, good plug there at the end. Maybe Bill and I can get hooked up at some point, and maybe I get another jersey for my collection.
Absolutely. I'm sure he'd love to talk to you, Bill.
All right. Hey, it's Fred and Butter time with our special guest, Fred Hugo, joining us to provide a bit of an in-depth breakdown of the upcoming Eagles game, and we're going to look at the Cowboys, the Giants, and the Redskins. And Fred and Butter was all over week one, Chet. He went 3-0 while you and I both went 2-1. Although I have to brag a little and say I picked the Eagles to win 27-10, it ended 29-10. Not too bad, so I guess I didn't include that turning point safety in my score, but not too bad after all. Well, Fred, welcome back.
Hey, guys, yeah, Bill, you not only that, the score is one thing, but you actually nailed how Carson Wentz was going to play, which was way really on point. I was impressed by that.
Yeah, well, you know, as I said earlier in the show, I just feel like the kid is going to be really, really good. And, you know, we talked about Jameis Winston. We talked about Marcus Mariota. And those guys, Winston especially, he just keeps getting better. I got to see some of that this week. And, you know, he threw 4 touchdown passes and – he's the deal, and Carson Wentz is going to be just like him, if not better.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Fred, what we're going to do is, just like last week, you'll make your predictions. Chet will pick a winner, and so will I. We'll keep running totals, and we'll keep it going. Certainly the listeners can chime in at any time or on Facebook, pick their own winners as well, and so let's start out, of course, with the Eagles visiting the Bears this week on Monday Night Football, and then we'll follow that up with the Saints visiting the Giants, the 1-0 Giants, and the 0-1 Cowboys visiting the 0-1 Redskins. Have at it.
Eagles come into Chicago Monday night. They're 3-point underdogs. I think this game's going to come down to Carson Wentz and Doug Peterson versus John Fox. They now have Carson Wentz on tape a little bit, even though it's one game, so they're not going to use the same blitz packages that the Browns used. The Bears in the offseason tried to improve their front seven the most. They brought over Danny Trevathan from the Broncos, and then they drafted the linebacker out of Georgia, Leonard Floyd. So I think they'll be improved up front, but I think it's going to come down to game planning and the adjustments that the Eagles make. Cutler, we know how he is. He's hit or miss. Funny fact for you, though, everyone's talking about under pressure. Actually, last year under pressure, he was actually led the league in touchdowns and completion percentage. So I know Adam Gase isn't there, but he actually improved upon that last year. So I don't know. I think the Eagles will be able to pull this one out 27-17. What do you guys think?
Go ahead,
well,
Chad.
You know, a lot of Eagles fans, I think, are expecting this will be a surefire win for the Birds. Hey, the Bears, as you mentioned, Fred, are 3-point favorites. It is their home opener. Jay Cutler has actually had some success against Jim Schwartz's coach defenses. He's 7-3 against them. Chicago is not a great team, but this one will not be easy for the Birds, in my opinion. Still, I'm going to pick this one more with my heart than my head, and I'm going to go with Eagles 20, Bears 19.
Woo, wow. Well, Fred, I have to tell you, I wrote down the exact same score, 27-17. So in an effort to be different, I'll change up. I'll go 24-17 Eagles rather than 27-17 that I picked. But I'm going Eagles.
That's funny because I crossed it out like three times, and then I went back to my original, which was 27-17. So.
All right.
I don't care what the score is. I just want that W.
W.
Yeah, I agree. Agree. And then the next game we got, what did you want to jump into? Sorry, you're supposed to leave.
No,
there.
Saints at the Giants.
Saints
at Giants. Last year's game, I don't know if you remember, was like a 101 total. Both defenses
yep,
52-49. Were
52-49.
52-49, the Saints edged out the Giants. Both defenses were just terrible, awful. Last week, the Saints defense was just as awful as last year. They gave up 167 yards on the ground, another 319 through the air. The Giants, however, I think their defense is much improved, and I think they'll have an easy day against the Saints offense or the Saints defense. They'll win this easily
34-23. Wow. Okay. New contract for Drew Brees. He and the Saints go into MetLife Stadium and pull off the upset. Saints 30-27.
Whew. I'm going all G-men. I think their offense, the Giants' offense is just too strong. The Saints will hit. They'll score points. It may be another high-scoring game. So I'm going to go 38-34 Giants.
Okay, one more.
There you
take
go.
Take you over. And the final game is the Cowboys at the Redskins. I nailed that game last week. Pittsburgh did blow them out. I almost got that backyard or end of the game touchdown, but that never came through. He threw a pick. Anyway, the Redskins, they're ranked last year 26th in run defense. And then as we saw last week on Monday night, it hasn't improved at all. D'Angelo Williams ran all over them, and Antonio Brown caught passes all over. I think there was like 300 plus yards passing. I think Dallas offensive line should have a much better time against the run than they did against Dallas. As long as Dak is in a turnover machine, Dallas should win this one. I see them winning 24-21 in a close NFC East matchup.
All right, and I kind of agree with you, Fred, on everything you said. Cowboys have won their last three visits to FedEx Field. Can they make it four straight? Hey, why not? I can't believe I'm going to do this, but I'm going to pick a third straight underdog. Yeah, I'm going with the underdog in all three of these games that we're talking about. Cowboys make the defending division champion Redskins 0-2 with a 24-20 win.
Well, I'll tell you what, if I'm going to sleep at night, it's not going to be because I picked the Dallas Cowboys. I'm picking the Redskins for no good reason other than because they're not the Dallas Cowboys. So I'm going to pick Washington, let's see, maybe 28-24 Deadskins.
All right.
Way to
keep
play
track
to the,
of all this,
to
Bill.
The fans, Bill.
What's that?
I said, way to play to the fans, Bill.
Oh, no, I just have to sleep at night, Fred. I can't sleep if I pick the stinking Cowboys. I'd rather lose.
I hear you.
All right. Well, hey, Fred, great job. We'll come back next week. We'll see how we did. We'll do it again, and we'll line up week three games. We appreciate it, and let's do it some more Fred and Butter time.
All right. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right.
All right, Fred. And now, Bill, this is the part of the program that we dread. We got to get this guy on, though. We said this is the way it's going to work. You win a week in the office pool, you got to come on the show. And look who wins week one. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is Danny Bevins.
What
hello,
an introduction.
Danny. Yeah, we love
wow,
you.
Hello. What an introduction. That was great.
You know, Chet, maybe I would rather pick the Cowboys than have to listen to Danny Bevins within
a
week.
Oh, God.
You know
Go
what
ahead,
I mean?
Danny. Tell us how amazing you are.
Bill, that hurt. That hurt. Hey, the Cowboys, really?
Just the facts, Danny.
Oh, man. Hey, I just want to make a quick comment about Bill Berge. He said something
yep.
along the lines of that if he played today's game, he would maybe be below average. I don't care.
Well, he
what
said
that
he said he wondered if he would be as good or below average. Yeah.
I don't care what decade or what league. Bill Berge would never be below average or even average.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Player.
I'm with you on that front.
Yeah.
I'm with you too, because one thing Bill Berge could do is if you had the football, he could find you.
You darn right he could. You weren't going nowhere.
That's right. Right. So, Danny, tell us how you managed to, what'd you win, 13 games? Was it 13 and 4?
I won 13 games, and I think, I'll tell you, it could have been 15 games because the Jets game was only a one-point loss, I believe, and the Patriots game was, I think, a one- or two-point loss. I'll tell you the one that really
Yeah, could have, should have, would have, Danny. Could have, should have, would have.
I know. The one that really got me was Bill's buddy Chip Kelly pounding L.A., and I took L.A., so I got that one all wrong.
Yeah. How bad
yeah,
is L.A.?
Yeah, so did everybody
goodness.
Else. So what can we look forward to this week? Is this because, you know, this is your only 5 minutes of fame you're going to get this week because you're going down.
Well, if I'm only going to get 5 minutes of fame, then I'm going to have to get – 5 minutes every week, so I guess I'm just going to have to win the week again and come back and haunt you some more.
All right, Danny.
I have some quick advice, though, since for Chet. I mean, you gave me a good run for my money at the end of the year last year, and you know, here this might help you out. I'll give you a secret for you. If you go
okay.
to the nearest Dick's Sporting Goods and you buy a big dartboard and throw darts. Just take that sport up. You'll do better than that.
Thanks, Danny.
Sure, man.
Appreciate
all right,
that.
Danny. We
kudos,
got our beaten.
To my man,
Kool-Aid.
Captain Kool-Aid.
We can't.
And the
well, we won't ever have to worry about him being on the show. That's for sure.
No, definitely not.
So, all right, Danny. Well, we appreciate it. You are in the lead after week one to win the signed Eagles Reggie White mini helmet. And good luck with that, but we don't expect to see you back.
Okay. Well, good luck to everybody else because you're going to need it.
Thanks, Danny.
All right. Thanks, Danny.
All right, fellas.
Hey,
great show.
Hey, Chet, I wanted to ask you, are you paying any attention to the Phillies here in September? And you know, Roman Quinn is up. Jorge Alfaro is up. He's playing. They're both playing. Alec Asher, my buddy, he's up and has pitched two real nice ball games. And that Aaron Altair hitting 197 now. What do you make of all this?
Well, I'm more in Eagles mode right now for sure, like most of the rest of the Philadelphia area fans. But, yeah, I'm still keeping tabs on the Phils. Altair has struggled a bit, as you indicated. But it is good to see Asher come back to the bigs with a couple of pretty good starts. Jake Thompson, who's on the mound tonight as we speak, has settled down after his rough first month, a couple of good starts of late. In fact, he's ahead tonight 2-0 in the third inning. And I really like Roman Quinn. Back-to-back multi-hit games, and boy, can that guy run. He is so fast. I'm wondering if he might be a starting outfielder next year. So that's one reason to keep tabs on them this September, just to watch some of these young guys, see how they play, see what kind of ability they have. But although Altair has struggled, like I said, I'm really, really liking what I see out of Roman Quinn and wondering, you know, does this guy have an immediate future in the 2017 Phils lineup?
Well, the interesting thing to me is over the last month or 6 weeks, the Phillies have, Pete McCann has done just about everything he can to give away Odubel Pereira's job, or else
yep.
Odubel is giving it away, one or the other. But everybody that has a chance to play gets an opportunity to play center field. I'm guessing there's a move going to be made with the All-Star.
Yeah, I agree. It looks like he's going to be the odd man out. That would be my guess. We'll see what happens, but I have a feeling Odubel Herrera will not be here next year at this time.
I agree. Hey, by the way, if the Phils are right now, they're 64-81 going into tonight's game. That's 145 games, 17 remaining. So let's say a 7-10 finish puts them just about where we thought they'd be, right in that 93-ish, 91 loss range.
I predicted 72 wins for the season. You predicted 70. So, yeah, if they go 7-10, that puts them at 71 wins. We are that good, Bill.
Well, and you know, it's interesting because there was such a good part of the season where it looked like they were going to do much better than that. And, you know, and I guess it's still about wherever they end up, 8 to 10 game increase over last season. But, not sure what to think.
Yeah, I know Pete McCann said last week he was very happy to get that 64th win or the other day, because that put him over last year's record of 63-99. So, yeah, they're on the way up. I'm sure they'll do even better next year. I think they are heading in the right direction for sure.
Oh, I agree. High hopes, no doubt about that. Well, hey, one final thought for you tonight before we part your parting shot. What did you think of the Allen Iverson Hall of Fame induction ceremony, the weekend, all that? Hey, I arrived late on the first day, but it was pretty cool after that.
Yeah, it was. AI was AI. Some good, some not so good. He rambled a bit in the speech. I hate that he blew off an event with some school kids earlier that day. That's not good. But the speech itself was heartfelt. He did absolutely show respect for the game and expressed his admiration for the Philly fans, which he knew he would. So all in all, I'm going to give him a solid B for everything. And I really liked Yao Ming and Shaq. They were both great, I thought.
Yeah, I did too. And I thought Iverson did a really nice job. You know, like everybody else, I wish he would have been there on time. Somebody said, well, you know, he missed a flight. Well, my comment back was, if I'm going in the Hall of Fame, I'd have been there 3 days early. There wouldn't have been any chance of missing any flights. But anyway, once that got going, I think he did a real nice job. AI is AI. He's not gonna speak like the President of the United States, but he did a nice job. And as you say, Yao Ming and Shaq, great job as well.
Yeah. And hey, Bill, I don't know if you know this, but this is a totally different topic. Doug Peterson caught wind of us doing our 100th show last week, which got some good reviews from everybody. Glad to hear that. And although he was busy preparing for his first game as an Eagles coach, Doug Peterson sent congratulations our way.
Give yourselves a round of applause, man.
Hey, which I thought was very nice.
Thanks, Coach. Thanks, Coach. I like the way he's thinking. You bet.
Yeah.
You bet. All right. Well, hey, let's get our signing update to Carl's Cards and Collectibles out there, Chet. Penn State and Green Bay Packers legend and Pro Football Hall of Famer and another super guy, Dave Robinson, will be in the store this Saturday, September 17th. Eagles defensive back Rodney McLeod will be in the store Saturday, September 24th. And longtime Hockey Hall of Famer, the Golden Jet, Bobby Hull, will be in the store October the 8th. And Carl has just announced the private signing with Flyers former goaltender and present GM Ron Hextall. So if you have any personal items you want signed, Carl needs them in his hands by mail or hand delivery no later than October 19th. So mark that date down. Stop by Carl's Cards and Collectibles at 22 West Eagle Road in Havertown, PA, or give Carl a call at 610-789-4996. You can also visit the website, carlscards.com, or contact Carl on Twitter at Carl's Cards. And, Chet, I wanted to ask you, you and Denny Malloy made it over to Carl's to visit with Harold Carmichael last Saturday. How was that?
It was awesome. Always great to stop into Carl's, of course. And Harold Carmichael, one of my all-time favorite Eagles, couldn't have been nicer. Talked to him for several minutes about his career And Denny and I both told him it's a crime that he is not in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I told him that since Ray Didinger successfully lobbied for Tommy McDonald, maybe he could do the same thing for him. He laughed. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun talking to Harold. And, oh, one other thing while I think of it, the Bill Berge interview, I want to give a shout-out to our buddy Steve Switkiewicz. He's been working with Bill Berge and Smothers on his own signings, and he helped facilitate that. So thanks to Swit for getting Bill Berge our way.
Oh, thanks, Swit. Appreciate that. And, hey, I also wanted to say, I don't know if you got to meet him, but another one of our longtime listeners, Rob Hernandez, was at Carl's also for the first time. Rob lives in Arizona, brought his family up to Philly, and stopped at the Philly candy store to visit with Carl for the first time, and brought his family along and had a great time.
Yeah, it's always a good time at the Carl's. I just wish I had a lot more money with me when I go there.
Yeah, that's a problem. That's a problem I have just as well. He knows I have a list of things that I want in that store, but it's kind of like a pecking order. You know, you gotta knock them down one at a time.
I hear
All
you.
Right, Mr. Chesko, parting shot for you quickly tonight, sir?
No true parting shot this week, Bill. Just some random thoughts, as I will call this. This is Merrill Reese's 40th year as the voice of the Eagles, and he still sounds tremendous. Do yourself a favor and check out his calls of the big plays from Sunday's Week 1 victory. We found out on Tuesday there are 12 nominees on this year's list for the National Toy Hall of Fame. There will no doubt be lots of support for Care Bears, Dungeons & Dragons, and Transformers, but there are two of my personal favorites on that list also. Nerf toys, I love the Nerf football, and Rock'em Sock'em Robots. You knocked my block off. I loved that one as a kid. The Phillies unveiled their 2017 schedule today. Always fun to look ahead. I'm already planning to schedule a day off April 7th for the home opener, and I will hope to get up to Fenway Park in mid-June to cross that off my bucket list. And finally, I like having a few drinks once in a while. I admit it. But how drunk do you have to be to decide it's a good idea to run on the field at a Monday night football game and rip off your shirt? Just wondering. That's all.
No comment. I can't help you with that one.
That was
all right. So we are at the top of the hour. So we'd like to remind everyone of the Liam's Dream event this Sunday at the Ridley Bowen Homes, PA. Check out their Facebook page, Liam's Dream, for details. We'd like to thank our special guests, the linebackers, Seth Joyner and Bill Berge, Fred Hugo, Carl's Cards and Collectibles, for their continuing support of the show. Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes, our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. For Jim,
hold on,
Chet
Bill.
Chesko,
hold on. I got one other thing for you. We got another minute and a half here, and I need your opinion. What happens Saturday at Happy Valley, Temple at Penn State?
Oh, we have a minute and a half. My clock must be wrong. What happens this week at Happy Valley? It's going to be all Penn State, I believe, this week, Chet. I think the Penn State offense is going to be a little bit too much for the Temple defense, and the Temple offense, I just don't – even though the Penn State defense is a little weak, I'm not sure Temple got enough offense.
Yeah, Penn State's actually favored by 8 or 9, I think, and they certainly have a lot of offense. The Nittany Lions, Barkley looking great with all those touchdowns. The quarterback doing all right. Could be a high-scoring affair, but I'll take the Nits to get a little revenge for last year's loss.
Yeah, I think so.
There you go.
All right. What else we have? You got anything else for me? Lay it on me. My clock must not be right.
Well, I mentioned Fenway Park. You ever been to Fenway?
I have not. It's on my bucket list.
There you go. Well, let's try to get tickets for next year. June 12th and 13th, I believe. The Phillies are up in Fenway. So I'm planning a trip to Boston in mid-June.
Okay. All right. I will make a note of that.
Go Eagles, man. Go Eagles.
That's right. Carson Wentz going to be all over it again this week. Watch out. I'm telling you.
I can't wait. Can't wait for Monday night. Can't get here soon enough.
Yep. All right, and next week, one final thought. Next week you will not be with me, so we will have a mystery guest next week.
Yes, I'll be down in Georgia with my father at a World War II reunion, so I'm looking forward to that, and so is my dad. So have fun next week without me.
All right. Well, we're ready to wrap it up. So for Jim Chesko, this is Bill Furman. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll join Philly Press Box Radio next Wednesday, September the 21st at 7 p.m. You can listen through our Facebook page or on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio and on both iTunes and Stitcher. High hopes, Philadelphia sports fans.
E-S-T-L-E-S!